Agreed completely, and all for the low cost that it was, and now only working on infantry, it can still be very problematic.
Charge the ion accelerator. It's time to forge the narrative.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host. I'm joined by Tanya Gates,
Hey, everybody.
Red Powell, and Adam Camilleri.
What up?
How did that? Yeah.
What was that?
We caught him
that
by
was
surprise.
The best intro I've ever done, is what that was.
Nailed it.
Never really that good, but
yeah. I'm blowing minds and everything.
It's just basically free red fuel right there.
So, yeah, well, someone's
we're back, everybody. Here we are. Thanks,
Adam,
for starting strong.
Yeah. You have to pull the personality out of Red. He can't just do it himself. Can't be trusted.
You're right. I needed an invitation, and you left the door open. Thank you.
It's my duty. Paul literally wrote me a contract, and it said, make Red good. And here I am to provide.
This is weird. Shot out of a cannon here, but back too. Look, I know
Sorry,
this is like season two where we're taking it slow, but we had a balanced data slate with a lot of big changes in it.
Yeah, this thing is holistic, and I'm happy, and it is fantastic, and it is everything that we need right now.
So we're 40,000, as you know, in kind of a state, if you're looking at the competitive side of things, where Eldari are winning a lot of events. Eldari have a great codex. And
I was going to say, that sounds kind of like the understatement of the year. Yeah, they're winning. They're winning a few things.
They're winning. Look, good players playing good armies, but this is like a case of the army is very strong. It is still very strong. And some other armies have been kind of also like in that second kind of echelon. Eldari, I think, were in a league and tier all their own. A collection of armies in that kind of tier right under them, and then trails off throughout the distance for the rest of the factions. And it has a lot to do with some of the core rules of the game, some of the core stratagems in the game, and also, just very efficient points per unit power levels. And that's right, I said power level, not meaning the same thing that the way I said it. But now the data slate is taking a whack at, dare I say, trying to balance out some of those things.
Indeed. And look, the Eldar menace is a multifaceted beast. Some would say akin to a Hydra. Cut down one top list, two more shall rise in its place. And it could be that it's the case. Look, that index has phenomenal depth. But I think the changes they've done will cause a fundamental rethink for Eldari players, and at the very least will shake things up and give a lot more opportunities to other faction players out there.
So we want to talk about Devastating Wounds. Devastating Wounds is previously, if you'd rolled the six on the wound, or if you'd somehow triggered that result, then you would do a series of mortal wounds for the damage outputs. But now it's changed a bit to each time an attack is made with such a weapon, if that attack scores a critical wound, no saving throw of any kind can be made against that attack, including invulnerable saving throws. Such attacks are only allocated to models after all other attacks made by the attacking unit have been allocated and resolved. And then the bullet point is saving throws cannot be made against critical wounds scored by this weapon, including invulnerable saves. So this did make some units a lot better. It actually will talk about the flip side of that coin, about how maybe some units that used to have defense against mortal wounds no longer can claim that ability versus devastating wounds in a second. But let's talk about this change. What do you think?
Amazing. On the face of it, the best change here is that it took high damage guns with devastating wounds from being a catch-all good into everything, because the way mortal wounds were generated and they were applied one at a time and carried over. You had a gun like the Wraith Cannon doing mortal wounds to such an extent that it would kill a 20-man, you know, neophyte brick just as well as it was going to kill a knight warden or a Canis Rex.
Yeah.
It killed everything at exactly the same proficiency, and that's not what we want. We don't want one gun that is clearly the best and better than everything else because of devastating wounds. But what do you guys make of the changes?
I do like it. I do. Now, as someone who likes to play with big models, I am like less excited about this, you know? Meaning, you know, I put a lot of eggs in one basket. It's still a take wrecking machine, but that's probably what it's designed to do.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's a, you know, in war game design, it's crazy, and we've talked about this before. You know, the levers that you can pull to change up the game and make things different. This is definitely an interesting take on it. Do we think that it's going to solve the problem, though?
I definitely think that some of those horde armies out there, or armies, I shouldn't say horde armies, armies that rely on some larger units to hang right. in there.
Because the splash things. Is going to, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't splash over across the horde.
Yeah, I think it's so going to really benefit. That. So the you know, armies like orcs, gene stealer cults, you know, that we've seen kind of on right on the cusp of breaking into those top categories there at events, I think will breathe a little bit of a sigh of relief with these changes.
I think I can buy that. I'm interested to see it play out. I like the adjustment. I understand why. I don't think that it's something that is gonna drastically swing the game in a wildly different direction that is so unwieldy that the game won't recover from this change versus that change, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I could buy that. I mean, I think it puts those weapons, like we're kind of talking about, in the category of maybe what the intent was to do, similar to, like, you know, D weapons from the past.
Sure.
You know, but, you know, that is some remains to be seen, but I'm willing to bet that we're going to see some big fatter units really make their way onto the table.
So what's interesting about this change is that, like, let's say Sternguard, right, who have devastating wounds on both of their guns, for single damage weapons that have devastating wounds, this is exactly the same, isn't it?
Yeah.
But better.
Yeah.
Because they would... Units that have, let's say, I've got a Watcher in the Dark in my Terminator unit, that gives me a 4-up feel no pain save against mortal wounds. That wound from the Sternguard gun is no longer a mortal wound. So it's better now against those things. It's better now against things like Custodes than it was. But fundamentally, into the vast range of things, it's exactly the same. So I actually think on some terms, on some guns, in some instances, this is slightly better, but way worse for those high damage weapons, right?
Yeah, I think you're dead on with that. So I do like it. I think this is a positive change. You know, I can look at it completely subjectively about what I choose to, like, bring to a lot of tables recently and be like, well, still killing my stuff, but, you know, my neighbor probably feels a lot better about it. So all the way around, a good change there. Let's jump to modifying a stratagem CP cost, the next section here. There's been a lot of things in the game that allow you to, you know, take things to zero or cost more or whatever, and this changed. Rules that modify the CP cost of a stratagem but that do not specifically name the stratagem can only be used to affect the CP cost of battle tactics stratagems. This does not apply to the Aircase Colossus, Striding Colossus, or Towering Wraith Construct abilities. So bringing in the fact that those stratagems, you know, have like a header, like a category that did not really matter so much before, but now battle tactics do.
I mean, for the longest time, I've wondered and pontificated upon the reason that they have names and titles and categories of stratagem, and I'd like to see them do more with it because it seems like a lever that they can pull that they're just kind of not. So yeah,
well, we saw epic deed stratagems and that kind of stuff becoming a, you know, they were a thing in the previous editions, and that is, you know, something, right, it's like right there ready to be harvested is something cool, and here it is. So I'm liking that. Stratagems that can be used more than once per phase per turn also got a little bit of an update here. Rules that allow you to use a stratagem even if another unit has been targeted by the stratagem this phase or turn, but they do not specify the name of the stratagem, can only be used to use battle tactics stratagem. So again, here again, breaking out the battle tactics stratagems.
Wild.
It's good.
It is.
Overwatch getting a change. This is something that I think we've all been on the receiving end of Overwatch because everyone can do it. And most people have a unit in their army that's like they want to be really good at it. They would position it to do that. But now it's going to get a bit of a change here. Essentially, the effect is changing here. If the enemy unit is visible to your unit, so you won't have things firing indirect at your models or units with Overwatch anymore, which is probably a thematic change, but also probably beneficial as people are starting to load in a lot of indirect and bonuses and that kind of stuff. So it can kind of just add, I guess, insult to injury on the bit of the field bads. And then another restriction here, you cannot target a unit with this, a Titanic unit with this stratagem. So Knight's just getting double hit here.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Sorry, go Red.
No, it was just, what were you saying earlier, Paul, about putting everything in one basket?
Look, I like it. I like the baskets sometimes. I like the big stuff. But yeah, just, I have been playing a lot of Knights recently also, and utilizing, you know, Titanic Overwatch. And I think that, I mean, what was mentioned in the MetaWatch video is that these are like big, you know, 400 plus point unit powerhouse fighting titans, and, you know, got a lot of guns to shoot. So maybe that when your opponent has taken up your entire movement phase with their shooting, maybe they don't feel good when that's happening.
I mean, it's always been funny to me when, in a lot of circumstances, things that people are building into their armies to take advantage of Overwatch, most notably being flamer units, it's a 1 CP shoot twice.
Good point.
If you are avoiding the negatives of Overwatch, which is the sixes to hit, it is literally just shooting again in your opponent's turn. And when you look at it like that, you can see why some changes needed to happen. I'm actually not quite sure this was the one I would have gone with, as in just excluding Titanic models, because I do think there are better or more elegant ways to do it. But I think this is a good thing to do and then see if it's still a problem afterwards.
Oh, you're getting rid of two things here. I mean, you're basically getting rid of the anything indirect that's not visible. And so you've got a lot of tanks that fall into that category sometimes. Yeah, and especially if they're already kind of like hunkered down out of line of sight, and then they're also punishing you in two phases, you know, on your turn and their turn.
Yeah. I guess the way I would have done it is probably just change the range. I've always thought the 24-inch range band was far too liberal.
It's awfully big. When you think that it's a 24-inch bubble, like you could have it in the center of the table, you're getting the most of the table with it.
Well, I also felt like Overwatch has taken a couple of different hits. The fact that they changed towering already and then took it away from big models, I'm not sure. That's the one I'm not sure they needed to do both. I should have clarified that in my previous statement, that not sure they needed to go this far. They could have done one or the other with those and just seen if that was enough to fix it up. I'm totally okay with them moving it from indirect fire. How stupid.
So in 40,000 years in the future, everyone has cell phones, I'm sure, too, or built-in vox. It's like, yo, shoot that guy over there. Like, it's not that much of a stretch to think you could have done that.
Yeah. Adam, sheesh.
Yeah, man. Oh, jeez. I feel so chagrined.
It's also important to point out that these changes are not necessarily all thematic changes. They are at their core things to make the game more fun for everybody.
I'm just excited that it can't happen twice in the same phase now.
Absolutely.
Yeah. This is a strategic ploy stratagem is what it is. So yeah, not a battle tactic.
Yeah, can't trust those ploys. Yeah, get out of here with those ploys of yours. We only accept tactics in this house.
Insane bravery is the next thing. And we won't go necessarily through every single thing, but these are the core things that apply to everyone. And so I wanted to touch on it here. The insane bravery, basically every word in this stratagem has changed.
Yeah. There's like a sentence and a half that's the same. And
yeah, so insane bravery is the one that lets you auto pass a battle shock test, the morale for this edition of the game. So just before you take the battle shock test for your army, you have to spend this, and you can only do it once per battle. So you can only do the insane bravery one time per battle. That's a throwback to the previous edition.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to want it.
I found I was only using it like once per game anyway. Like, I didn't find that like bravery tests were really hindering my gameplay, but I don't really know like why this changed. Like, what was abusing this rule? Just because I don't get to play against all the different factions, so I don't like know why this changed.
Was there abuse, or was it just really taking away like any minimizing the effectiveness of what Battle Shock could be.
So there's so many. Since 8th edition, GW has been telling us that we're going to make the morale phase matter. We're going to make the morale phase matter. Hang in there. We're going to make it matter. This is the first. this is the first kind of bit that I've seen them be like, okay, we've fundamentally built Battle Shock in as a mechanic for just off the top of my head, three armies. Demons, Nids, and Chaos Knights all have a core mechanic that leverages Battleshock, and then they literally give everybody the ability. Every single army in the game, at a key moment, can say, we don't care about your ability. And so this is just saying, yeah, cool, once ever, and now with the caveat of you have to take the Battleshock, so it's not as good. Because what used to happen is, the biggest time it usually matters that I've seen is you know, you're trying to take somebody off an objective, you try and Battleshock them before you find out if you have to send over half your freaking army to go and shoot them dead and whatnot to get them off the objective. Because if you battle shock them, you just walk one guy on there, take the objective, get your points, get your cards, or nuke their primary, whatever you want to call it. But they used to just be able to roll the test, and then if they failed, be able to just spend the CP. Now they have to spend the CP, cannot take the chance on the test. Yeah.
Well, this insane bravery is the battle shock step of your command phase. So it's not gonna counteract those ones that happen outside of your command phase.
Yes, that is correct. I mean, that's how it always was. You could never.
Pointing that out there, because there are things that happen in those things, but that's when you use this thing. And anyway. That's the one sentence that didn't change, by the way. Everything else is... Oh, yeah. So then here we got Ruins Invisibility section. So this is the main thing. Towering models basically have to get their toe in to get their towering ability to see over the terrain.
This is a great change. I think this is the most simple and elegant change they could have made while still trying to keep the thematic of effects. I mean, forgive me if I'm wrong, but just because there was just so much disbelief that needed to be suspended for me to believe that my models, who are hiding behind a thing, aren't trying to stay hidden from the giant building-sized guy on the other side of the battlefield.
Yeah, it'd be a shame if you actually had to, like, actually hide and not just stand behind, like, a pencil-thin piece or something.
It would be a real shame, right? But now it works like, hey, the thing is actually looming over the ruin. You're screwed. That makes a lot more sense.
I guess. I'm sorry that some things were hard. You know what I mean? I think that they played around with it. You know, increasing, and I mean, you can see the game designers at work, and that's what I appreciate. Really, they thought increasing points was going to do it, and I think that that's a I don't think that was necessarily incorrect in the approach. I think that it was a matter of, and we talked about this, I think there was a matter of other compounding factors, right? Devastating wounds ability and all the other things that could tag in. When the as you've said before, Adam, the terms and conditions are so easily achieved and then enabled by something like towering, I understand, right? Especially when the tactical scope of the game, towering, much like Titans, right? It's like a mini Titan ability. It almost literally turns infantry and things like that into insects in relative comparison to what these platforms are as combat or maneuver platforms, if you want to call them that. And so I thought it was a interesting adjustment. I think they, you know, Paul, you want to have a list of knights. I get it. There's nothing wrong with that. And how do they have to make the game so that you can do that and everyone else can still enjoy the game? Because, like, yeah. I'm sorry, in real warfare, like, that fair, you know, back and forth just doesn't have to exist.
In warfare, in games like Magic, you know, it's like one person wants to have all the fun, you know.
That's not the
kind of game that Warhammer 40,000 is.
Correct. Mm-hmm. It is not. And that's where I totally understand why they went this direction, to try and create that balance. And that I understand.
Wait, so you're saying if there was a battle happening right now and I call hacks, they won't stop and discuss the terms with me? And I say, dude, the tanks only are too much. I call hacks. Your stuff is OP.
Only if it's somehow in my benefit.
Yeah.
Sure. Sure, but, I won't. Okay, I get it. I won't bring the tanks, but you have to give me more stuff when I win.
That's fair. That's fair. So the fundamental issue here was, if you were to take an all-comers army and face a heavy towering skew, which is essentially what most knight armies are, and, you know, double wraith knight builds, that's a heavy towering skew, as in that's the thing they're leveraging. Their ability to kill the one or two things that you have that can kill them are insurmountably better than the fact is that 80% of their army is ineffectual against you. So they can afford to lose half their army if it results in killing the 20% of your army that's deadly to them, and then it becomes a snowball effect of just becoming hacked, overpowered. It's an insurmountable problem now. And I think that was the check and balance they're trying to get rid of, because sure, that did seem to feel like a lot of the exchanges were becoming.
Well, we'll see how that plays out. If it's too much, did they knock him back too far with the points and now getting rid of the Overwatch and then making it much more difficult for them to actually get their guns to bear? You know, what does that do? Does that force Chaos Knights, you know, on people that want to play with those models? Because you're not even playing with the bigger models. You're playing with the 13, 14 small ones.
Yeah, and I feel like that's all, like you said, Paul, that's already the way that I think Renegade Knights, Chaos Knights are headed. And unfortunately, I think Imperial Knights are probably going to be headed that way also. Maybe Canis Rex still makes the cut, because as we know, when we get further on with this, not only have there been some points changes to those factions, but I think Imperial Knights have taken a holistic nerf. Just to say it plainly.
Yeah, in a lot of different ways here, it all kind of contributes to that army list being the current build. By the way, the current build. Not that there won't be faction experts that find better builds.
Correct.
And again, it's about creating that better play experience for everyone on all tables is the idea, right? But you know, the prevailing list that was out there right now is significantly worse today than it was yesterday.
I mean, a lot of the better lists for knights that we've seen recently has been, you know, Canis Rex, a Warden, a Crusader, and then I think he can get four or six, somewhere between four and six little armages, depending on how if you want to be taking assassins and exaction squads and things like that in addition.
Oh, I'm glad you brought up the exaction squads.
Yeah. Well, this is a good change.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't disagree, because it's kind of interesting that unit became the ubiquitous unit you're going to see for Agents of the Imperium. So Agents of the Imperium is something open to all Imperium players. You can take a section of units that do not violate your specialness of your detachment, whatever you pick. And exaction squads used to be, you know, a five person squad, but you could get some really great war gear in there with them. And I think that's really what puts them over the top over like the Voidsmen and maybe some of the other choices there.
Feel no pain as well.
Yeah, well, that's the war gear there is that's what I'm talking about. They have a decent armor set.
Yeah.
They've got, and they have a great feel no pain ability, because you can take the med pack on them and really low profile could hide them really well. But now the FAQ, or sorry, the balanced data slate has increased that squad size to 10 is your minimum, not five. So you're basically doubling the points for a single squad, you know, kind of somewhat maybe lowering the effectiveness of what you could do. Although I think most people have been taking two squads, that's to be in two different places.
Yeah, I had a fundamental problem with what they were doing. It really felt like the Loyal 32, didn't it? Where we were at in 8th edition, where it was like, oh, well, let's just bring a bunch of cheap nothing dudes to sit on my objectives so my expensive good units don't have to sit on the objectives. And we want as cheap a unit as possible for that job.
That's not a real tactic. Nobody does that.
Definitely nobody does that. Well, actually, never mind. I ain't barking up that tree.
Yeah, taking the bait.
Nope. Step back from the precipice. But the exaction squad was just too easy a choice. It was just too easy a choice and too good all the time.
It did feel really good using them, I'll say that, because occasionally, you know, you'd be able to endure some damage or make people all spend a lot more points to come over and deal with them.
That was the thing as well. There was nothing of that equivalent available to any Xenos army. It's only available to the Imperiums. I mean, and I guess you could say there are some equivalent good units that you can do for Chaos in, you know, taking Demons or Chaos Space Marines with each other. But those are nowhere near as good as the Exaction Squad points for points. So I really think it was a little bit of a Imperium getting too good of the deal.
I agree too, but the Voidsmen at Arms also exist. They just won't have the feel no pain. But there's still 40 points for five dudes. So you can perform a lot of that same function, although, you know, arguably are a lot worse because they feel no pain. So maybe that's why they didn't get on the radar. Maybe that's it. But Agents of the Imperium is one of the cool things that the Imperium get. Look, just, you know, come over to the Imperium side and you too can have Agents of the Imperium. It's not compelling enough. I do agree that's it's kind of a cool thing. But so I guess a nice segue into talking about some of the faction changes. And I don't want to hit on all of them, but we can talk about some of the things that people, again, if you don't play Eldari, you might be happy about. Phantasm. This is a stratagem that can be bag-breaking. It can flip turns. You could frustrate your opponent to no end. Now it only lets you target Eldari infantry instead of any Eldari unit. And what that does, Phantasm ability lets you move a Eldari now infantry unit 7 inches at the end of your opponent's movement phase. At the end of one of your opponent's phases, you get to move one of your units 7 inches.
It's possibly, and it was possibly, the best stratagem that had ever been created. It was so good.
Well, think about what you're doing with that. You're turning what might be a 3-inch charge into a 10-inch charge. You know, you're turning a 7-inch charge into impossible.
You get to take in all the information from the most powerful phase of the game, the movement phase. You get to absorb all the information from your opponent's movement phase and then foil their plans for CP. Eventually, you're spending CP to make sure their plans don't work, whatever they've tried to set up. So freaking good.
Agreed completely. And all for the low cost that it was. And now only working on infantry, it can still be very problematic, but it doesn't work on things like Wraith Knights or Fire Prisons.
So do you think that that's enough? Again, I go back to, okay, we've seen the change to Devastating Wounds. We now have the change to the stratagem. And then, of course, Overwatch. Is that enough to affect what we've been looking at in the meta, in your opinion?
I do think so. Now, compared with some other things. So let's now look at the, because this is not all like any one particular thing squashes anything, which is cool because maybe you've built your list in a way that only part of you're only partially affected by this and not completely affected by this. But let's look on the Eldari side and just all the points changes that they've received. Basically, a lot of things that we saw just in any list, such as Fire Prisms, Incarns, Wraith Knights, have all taken big upticks in points.
I will say, with some knowledge of the game and possibly what G-Dub's intent will be, whether they think it's a strong faction or a weaker faction, especially when they've identified as such in like previous meta articles. When I just scroll, the first thing I do when I open a Minotaur field manual, is just literally scroll down and just see how much red there is on the problem factions. And I, good, delicious. let me see. It's just how much red there is per faction. It's a joyous occasion.
And which faction caught your eye this time?
Actually, Black Templars.
Okay.
It's a very small subset of data slates, and every single one has red on it, which means either way, it's exciting to break down. Because if stuff's gone up, that's exciting to know which ones. If stuff's gone down, that's exciting as well. And I will say I am very excited about Black Templars. I think they have done pretty well out of this. Your Blood Angels as well, mate. Looking at them, there's a lot of red. It's good to see.
That's good. Yeah, yeah. Certainly don't want to talk about some of the things that got risen up to, and not just focus on what got kind of maybe brought in line for the Eldari, but just know that if you've been playing out there and getting frustrated with it, they're going to have potentially fewer elements on that. What I think is going to actually translate into fewer scoring units, fewer of the units that they will go to take your objectives with, which gives you a leg up if you're one of these factions that maybe got a benefit or maybe not touched at all, your ability to interact with the game. What about the Black Templar? What got you excited about that?
Mate, I don't want to say it. Just in case I'm wrong. But the price for the Crusader squads is really attractive. One of the armies I've always wanted to do is I want to have 60 Crusaders on the table. I want that. I want that. I want to live that life. And they've gone down significantly in points for 20 Crusaders. I don't know if this is a good army, but I'm willing to find out and paint a lot of guys in the process. But 280 points for 20 Space Marine bodies that can all have a feel no pain, that seemed pretty attractive to me.
That does sound nice because, I mean, that's a lot of OC. That's a lot of wounds to shift.
Yeah, and it is 100 chainsword attacks per 20. So, you know, not the... You love to see it.
Oath of the moment is calling your name.
Well, that's right. I'll take it to an event or two. Like once per event, I'll get a full squad into somebody and just start chuckling to myself. Like Jabba the Hutt. My time has come.
Very cool. What about Custodes? Like the exaction squads are not the only squad size changes that we saw.
Yeah, I think this is for the best in some ways. So Custodian Guard, their unit size got cut in half. They can no longer take 10 mans. The max is fives. And then Custodian Wardens, and I think is it Alaris as well? No, Alaris stayed the same, but Custodian Wardens, they are only able to take five instead of six now also.
That seems like a big change to me.
Yeah, what do you guys think? Is that going to be a fundamental rethink? They also got points adjustments as well.
Just having played Custodes against them more so than having played them myself, I think that it'll be interesting to see the change in the squad size. You know, from the minimum amount, I just don't see a lot of people taking the smaller units. The ones I played against, folks were running the bigger, mid-sized, large squads with a bunch of attachments to them and all the special hero stuff that went from there. And so it was cool. I don't know if it's enough to say that's going to cause a massive shift or change to Custodes all in all.
It seems like the damage they can take, though, for an individual unit holding down an objective, that's what I'm talking about. It seems like a big change.
Sure.
But I really wasn't necessarily thinking about the change to Devastating Wounds. So that is, you know, now when just one super cannon may vaporize just one of them, maybe they don't need all those extra bodies
right
now to do the same
right
job.
Yeah, for sure. There's definitely a shift to that. I don't know if it's enough to say that it's like a major buff to them necessarily, or a major distraction from them. Either way, I don't think it is.
So we've got an interesting, I think there's been something that Paul and I have identified on the other show we do, the one on Meta Chasers. I almost don't need to tell you the characters people are taking in their lists anymore. I just tell you the units, and then people can just guess what leaders are in there, and usually they're correct.
Yeah.
What is funny about this is that there was a bit of a min-max effect happening in Custodes, where the buffs that they got were magnified due to how big the units they could put on them. I'll be interested to know what leader units, what characters, still make the cut when they're being applied to much fewer models.
Oh, that's a great thing to think about. Yeah. Are we going to see Blade Champions everywhere?
Still? Exactly right. Yeah. Is it still worth it when you've only got, you know, five bodies to apply it to? Is it still worth it? Because now, you know, a Custodian Guard unit could have been, you know, that was 11 models because it was 10 plus a character, could have been making combat with seven, you know, Custodian Guard in the character. Is now that's going to be two Custodian Guard in a character. Is that still worth it? I'm interested to find out. And so those are some of the things I really like to see when the meta shakes down. It'll be interesting to see Eldari as well. Do the Farseer still, are the ubiquitous Farseer still going to make it? Because just about in every list we've seen an Ortark Wayleaper, a Farseer, and a Farseer Skyrunner. They've made the cut for just about every single top Eldari list I can think of.
I would argue that the Farseers are going to be even more important for flipping those dice for them still. The fake
dice. They might be.
Because they got fewer units. And everyone's got to be protected or used or whatever. It's like you're exactly right. Like at what point though, because you have fewer units, where do you start making compromises? And do you really compromise what's doing your damage, or do you compromise your support and scoring units and just hope
perfectly
for the best? Figuring that out is gonna be awesome. In the Custodes too, the Venatari went down pretty significantly points wise. So the Venatari are down for a squad of three by 35 points and 70 points for a squad of six. Now, a squad of six is still 400 points, but 70 points cheaper than it used to be. They were a popular choice last edition, and then I think fell off immediately. Well, maybe some other things too, but definitely for the points wise, but you know, give you a little bit of extra movement. They move 10 inches in your function, in your force here. They're not bad. In case, since you haven't seen them, they have kinetic destroyers and have an Atari Lance as their weaponry for their range. Yeah, it's not bad. You know, their pistols are sustained hits one, hitting on two, string six, neg one, one damage. The Lance being hitting on two, string four, neg one, two damage apiece, two attacks, but assault.
So changing tact a little bit, I'm really happy with what they did with Guard.
Let's take a break and then we'll jump into Astromel Terran. We all love the Guard around here.
Thanks.
See you in a minute.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
Everybody, we are back. Thank you very much for checking out our sponsors and also checking out our Patreon. Those are just ways that keep the show going, and any amount of support there, you know, means a whole lot. Every tier is awesome. Really thank everybody who's taken the leap to go over there. It means a whole lot. Consider doing it. Thank you. Astra Militarum. A lot of changes here.
Yes. Oh, yes. Yes. I am freaking happy as hell. So they got what I call the Jakari treatment, which I think is what we call it when G-Dub nerfs the things that were oppressive and then buffs what they actually want us to take. As like, they're like, well, here's a bit of a bait and switch. This stuff was bad for the game, and I'm talking about artillery right now.
Indirect
so
fire.
Let's take that away, but let's acknowledge the fact that if we take this away, your next best thing is not that good, so we're going to let you have a little bit more of that stuff. And so for the longest time, I mean, what does everybody think of when they think guard? You think of massed infantry, and you think probably Lehman Russes,
yeah.
What we didn't think of until probably the end of 9th edition was sentinels for days and artillery pieces. Even though they're not fundamentally, you know, wrong for the identity of the army, but that was all we got. That was all we had. Whereas all the way through 8th edition, I think it was very much the tank commander days and all the Lehman Russes in addition. And now that is what they have done. The Lehman Russes have all come down by, I think, a minimum of 15 points. Most are 20, 25 point reductions. Holy crap, I just noticed this. Did anybody else think that Iron Hand Strachan was quietly really, really, really good?
What happened?
He went down 25 points. He only costs 55 now. He's a monster.
All right. Excellent. You're just going to go, you know, blaze by the Bane Blade and that point? Reduction?
Sorry. How much did it go down?
What is that? 60 points?
60 points.
Yeah.
What do you reckon? Well, it didn't have towering, so it hasn't lost anything by the towering change. So, you know, that's just 60 more points. That gets you an entire 10-man Cadian squad because they went down by 5 points.
Yeah, so you can take one of those Baneblade chassis with a transport capacity and fill it up.
But is what I said before, does that make sense? Where they were just like, look, artillery is just not that fun for anybody. So we'll take away the things that were unfun and bring back the stuff that was fun.
Taking it away by, you mean, increasing the point cost on some of those.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and you can still play that as the way you want to do it. You're just going to have far less of it.
Yeah, yeah. It does seem like they've definitely raised up some underperformers or ones that... Now, look, by the way, the Baneblade still has some issues because it's a giant model. And if you're playing on a board that has terrain that's sufficient to where you feel like you've got a, you know, lanes of fire and maybe some closed off areas, the Baneblade may present its own troubles.
I don't get what you mean. What are you talking about?
I know that in the real world, walls don't matter to tanks, and certainly not the size of the Baneblade. But in this game, Warhammer 40,000, you know, walls might present a little bit of a problem.
Paul, would you like to own a yacht?
I mean, yachts are cool.
Yeah. So what if that yacht had treads and a massive gun on it?
Now you're talking my language.
I don't see what the problem is here.
There you go.
I feel like we can make up for it.
Sorry, I didn't mean to jump in and waylay the Iron Hand Strachan talk, because I'm really not going to pass up any opportunity to talk about Katagen.
Totally fine. Totally fine. I will say I'm extremely happy with the adjustments to guard. I think they... I haven't played guard in 10th edition because they didn't excite me, because what I love
afraid.
About guard. Well, I was afraid of being bored.
Oh yeah, sure.
I was gonna set up my 6 to 8 artillery pieces.
That's why you haven't been out there just beating Eldari with guard, because you're afraid you're gonna be bored with it.
Because you have right. Where's all your GT wins?
He's World Eaters. World Eaters.
I'm over here playing World Eaters.
When he chooses to be, when the grass is green. No, mind.
I will say the Eldari, you know, are of course tough, but the Astra Militarum with your indirect fire put up a good offense against them. So it was one of the counters. And now if you're playing someone that didn't have that type of firepower, then you did kind of create another lopsided thing. So I think it was not only, you know, basically that B table, not a mid table warrior, but like third and fourth place bracket terror is the Astra Militarum indirect fire stuff.
Not strong enough to topple the top dogs, but an absolute monster against those around or below it. I will point out, Paul, and Red, this one's especially for you, Red. The Maniacs reduced the points cost on the best and greatest unit of all time. Gaunt's Ghost went down by 15 points.
Slime Arbor, is it?
No, Gaunt's Ghost only cost 100 points now. And I already thought they were possibly one of the best units in the index.
Yep, and going to remain there. I bet you when it comes time for Codex, they're just going to get better. This unit is continuing to, as these books continue to drop, I think we just need to be really concerned about whenever Beckwin's model drops, how overpowered that's going to be. So it's unstoppable. I'm sorry. It's literally written into the very fabric of the Warhammer game.
That will eventually get a Beckwin? You know,
a Beckwin's on the way, and when she shows up, the game will it'll have peaked.
Red is deep in the speculation tank.
Gaunt's, no. This is no speculation. This is straight up Nostradamus. I mean, look at him. Gaunt's Ghosts have just continued to skyrocket into higher levels of practically untouched meta. Like, they're just that high up. But everybody that's playing guards, like, I probably should make sure I have 1,900 points of everything and then 100 for Gaunt's Ghosts now.
Scout I agree Sentinels with that take. Went up a little bit by 10 points apiece.
Probably for the best.
Well, we've seen them be such utility. They not only give you the bonuses to hit, they get the move. You can put a last cannon on them. You can also bring them back with the stratagem, the reinforcement stratagem. So I think it's still a steal at 10 points increase, like 60 points a model instead of the 50. So that probably could have been pushed a little bit more.
Yeah. Possibly. I mean, they're so integral. But see, now with the artillery change, with artillery, not going away, but being more disincentivized, the need to have the Sentinels has decreased quite a bit because they were a big activator for a bunch of your stratagems and making sure you have the right buffs for your artillery pieces. So if artillery are on the decline, possibly the Scouts, the Sentinels in general could be on the decline also. Well, but either way,
they still let you reroll ones. Even if you're not using the indirect fire, I mean,
it's huge, man.
And mm-hmm. the fact that it can be recycled, I don't think they're going anywhere. I think that you basically need to earmark the extra 30 points for your list just for these still.
That's fair.
But you're going to get that because if you were taking a Lehman Russ Demolisher or a Tank Commander, you basically got 20 extra points just hanging around.
Well, yeah, what's wild to me, and this is possibly Adam's value pick of the review, ring-a-ding some kind of bell. The Lehman Russ Demolisher was 220, now it's 200. So it went down 20 points. The Tank Commander, which can be a demolisher, was 240, is now 205, went down 35 points. So if you value, so it's 5 more points to go from a regular Lehman Russ to a Tank Commander Lehman Russ. Now, ostensibly, all that really changed is you get the ability to deal to do an order and exchange. What's the ability on the demolisher? Is it the closest target one? Anyway, the Tank Commander gets to shoot on death is what you're doing. Yep. So if you think that's the better ability, well, you just tank the Tank Commander, or you just take 3 of both.
The Lehman Russ Demolisher has the linebreaker rule. It basically lets it fire better into engagement range. And the Tank Commander, it's got the death befitting an officer. So you roll a die on a 2+, you get to shoot when you remove the model. I'm a big fan.
Yeah, I'm a big fan. I think the Tank Commander with the Demolisher is very attractive at the moment.
And look, we've been telling people these are good for a long time. Now, it turns out they're a little bit cheaper, so they're probably even better. So I'm excited.
25 points came off the Rogal Dorn as well. So that is pretty significant also.
The Rogal Dorn has the ability that I think we just haven't seen really showcase the breakout because we haven't seen them on the table. You know, so are we going to see them now? Is this a meaningful change?
I think that across the board with some of these drops, I think it gives room for it. I think it gives room. I'm not saying that you're going to see a ton of them because people are going to probably argue efficiencies and whatnot. I think it's a great model. I think that it has a place enough in some ways. I'm not saying that you're going to spam them all over the place, but I do think it's got enough. I think that especially some tank commanders and whatnot, it has potential. Bringing them down, just like we were talking about other things going up in points, I think bringing them down is definitely a way to make it more appetizing, I guess, for a guard user.
260 points is still a chunk for, you know,
it is
for a tank, and with, you know, still has to see things, has to do, I mean, or whatever. But the ability I was talking about is the ablative plating. Once per battle, when an attack is allocated to this model, you can change the damage characteristic of that attack to zero.
Yeah, that's big.
So maybe a volcano cannon one shot gets on you. Like, sorry, that's going to be a zero. Let me throw this burning piece of armor, kick it off the tank. A nice shot in your guard-on-guard engagements.
Does that work now against Dev Wounds? It would, wouldn't it? The new Dev Wounds? It still works, yeah?
Yeah, it would.
Yep, it would. It's
excellent.
Because it just shrugs off, regardless of the fact that the Devastating Wounds ignored your saves.
Yep, that's pretty nice. That maybe that one up in value thing is a bunch of things that did prevent Dev Wounds went away. This one has remained, or, you know, it's in a sense gotten better.
Yeah, and maybe that's the insurance, you know. And then, although I will say, I'm a big fan. I painted up 3 regimental engine seers as soon as they dropped, and I haven't found
rookie
room
mistake
in the list for them.
Yeah, yeah.
Even though they seem to have an awesome ability, you know, does the fact all these tanks are getting a little bit cheaper, does that bring the regimental engine seer back into the conversation? We shall see. A lot of good astromil. If I was building an astromilitarum list right now, I think I would go a little heavier than I have been on the Lehman Russes.
Yeah, definitely.
And maybe a little, I don't know about more infantry, but because I've been running like 3 squads of infantry, it's tough. I've got to put a little pen to paper here.
Yeah, it's going to be a hell of a lot of experimentation coming out of this data slate. Everyone, so many people get to go back to the and this is one of the most exciting things that comes around with these ones, especially when they were one of the big ones that hits, like, so there have been a lot of data slates that just hit the best 2 armies and then the worst 2 armies, then maybe some incremental changes in the middle. But essentially everyone has got a new lease on life with this and needs to go back to the drawing board and just see what they can squeeze out of their chosen factions. And it's going to be good.
Agreed. You know, and then like Rough Riders got a little bit of a points break. I still don't know that this is the world they want to live in right now.
Yeah, I think the Borgrin looking far more attractive.
Which got the points wise, or just they're what they do on the table?
They're what they do on the table. If you wanted a melee unit, I think the Borgrins is probably where they're at. I haven't looked at them. Did they stay the same, or they went up, went down?
They're 80 points for a squad of 3.
Ooh, they went down. That's pretty good.
Yeah, they're previously 90 points, so they got 10 points down.
Yeah, I think that's good. Awesome.
These engine seers getting paid for all over the place. Tank commanders, though, get some orders, get some fight on death or shoot on death. Back on the menu. Any other big changes we want to cover before we basically stew on this for a week or two and see what army list we can come up with?
There's so much to unpack here. We could go for another 4 or 5 hours.
Didn't talk about Death Guard. Death Guard got some, you know, basically some quality of life improvements. Didn't get a movement improvement, but they got some quality of life improvements.
They're essentially a new faction now. Like, they're just straight up just a new faction. With the amount of points changes they got and then the new rules added, a full fresh eyes. Just look at everything. Just go back over everything in that faction with a fresh set. Like, forget everything you thought. Just rethink the whole thing. Same as Votann. Votann getting essentially a new lease on life as well.
Yeah, which they needed that dramatically. Adeptus Mechanicus, not sure if they got the same treatment just yet. But that's another faction that I think is struggling just a little bit. Actually do look at tournament lists and stuff over the course of the weeks, because we are interested in that side of the game. So we'll be bringing that news of what things are settling down on probably at least in a couple of weeks after events start to allow those things to, basically into their event. A lot of events have like a exclusionary period to where they don't allow changes from the game to creep in. So it might be a little bit 2 weeks before everything catches up. But I know a lot of people are very anxious to get these changes on the table for their faction. Oh, before we go, I want to talk about one more thing hobby-wise, if you'll indulge me.
Of course.
I think we can, I think we can manage it for the hobby.
Okay. So the new Biovore/Pyrovore kit, I built that, and it comes with, you know, both cannons don't share any parts. So you could technically build both cannons. The Pyrovore is built differently than the Pyrovore, meaning the tail is actually different. On the Pyrovore, has like a tail that comes up as almost like a shield or a fan or whatever and touches the cannon. And so if you don't care about that, you can actually interchange the 2 cannons on the creature. So you stretch the kit a little bit. And I did this by using a paperclip. I found one paperclip in my junk drawer. and clipped off the two long pieces, and I fixed each one long piece each into the cannon itself, and then drilled a little hole into the main body of the creature, and it just slides right in, and you can interchange the cannons, and I don't think anyone will know that. I don't think anybody will know it's a different creature, you know, basically other than the cannon. I don't think they'll miss it, but that's not everybody likes to compromise the models that way, because you know the power vor definitely gets built a little bit differently with a different tailpiece. But if you don't mind the tailpiece being the same as it would be on your power vor, you can stretch the kit, and I thought that was pretty cool.
I love hearing about stuff like that, because you know everything in this world seems to be getting more expensive, and being able to sort of double purpose things, I think. Basically, any way to save money in the hobby, I think, is a great tip.
Well, we got these little, you know, data slates that may change, so the efficiency which you want to run may change. But at the same time, it is a little fiddly. They've got in there that it sits in there just fine for me, but it's not everybody's thing. But I thought, you know, since the new kit coming out, people may have them on pre-order. You could, you know, edition proof yourself, balanced data slate proof yourself if one kit happens to be more prevalent than the other. And I'll eventually, when I get it painted, I'll post some pictures of both of these things and see what y'all think.
I look forward to it.
That is our show this week. It's been a pleasure talking with y'all. Please do not forget to leave us some 5-star reviews, like, thumbs up, and everything else. This is a wonderful time in the game when it feels like a lot of like brews now have a new lease on life. And I'm curious to see where people go with it. We'll see y'all next week.
Bye, everybody.
See you then.
See ya.
Shamawama. See you later. Got to start like I ended.
Tenets demand you tune in next week for the greater good, of course.